We are.
Do you have anything further to add, Glenn?
No, I think their testimony clarified quite a few.
Are you in agreement with the Attorney's report?
We are.
Board members, do you have any questions of either the applicant or our professionals? Grade to the bottom of the logo, 20 feet, we calculated when that happened?
Actually, 20 and a half feet now, we reduced it.
Correct.
6 inches.
That's the bottom of the sign?
Bottom of the sign.
Do you have any idea how much diameter the Roxboro sign is? Or the S?
Somewhere around 4 foot, somewhere around.
Okay, at this time, I'm going to turn it over to Leo. He's going to frame a motion in affirmative, or we're going to go to a vote. Vote, Leo?
Sure, the motion is for C variances related to signage. First one for total sign area, 20 square feet, the maximum permitted per side, and the new calculation is 112 square feet of total sign area. The sign height, meaning not the grade, but the top to bottom of the sign of the main Santucci, because the main sign is the Santucci, the original square pizza. The maximum permitted is 2 feet, they're at 3.5 feet. And there's also a sign height variance for the logo, again 2 feet permitted, and they're reduced diameter of 4 feet. Sign projection above the roof line, that's not permitted, and the logo sign is projecting 6 inches above the roof line. Mounting height, the minimum mounting height of the main Santucci sign cannot be less than 10 feet, and they're at 8.5 feet or 9 feet?
The main sign is 9 feet.
The main sign is 9 feet, and the same variance for the game room sign is at 8.5 feet.
Correct.
Gotcha. And then the final variance is that bottom of the logo sign shall be no more than 15 feet from grade, and instead about 20, it's a 20 and a half feet. And the conditions would be the applicant will comply with any representations with me, and any conditions in Mr. McCormick's report January 24th, and the revised plans will show the amended 4 foot logo or medallion signs.
Right. I'm going to have a motion.
I'll make a motion.
A second, please.
Second.
And we'll have roll call votes. State your reasons, please.
Commissioner Langford?
I vote yes on the application. I think the sign package most definitely fits the size of the building. This is one of the larger commercial structures we see on Bender Avenue. We've had the theater probably coming in for very similar variances at one point. I would imagine we granted it once for them because it's such a large structure. What I would suggest is that we take a look at our sign ordinances and look at basing them on the size of the structure instead of just one size fits all. So it is a large facade here. While I didn't have an issue with the 5 foot diameter, I get that can be a little imposing. So I appreciate Blake, you downsizing that a little bit. It's going to be our fall on Revel, right? So a little spot. So. I vote yes on the application. I don't think it's a negative impact to the community and support the application.
Commissioner Kriebel?
I agree with everything the commissioner said. I think my hope is that the improvements and the new signage encourage the neighbors to take as much pride in their facade and their signage. I think it's a good step in that direction and does scale it.
Tom Halpin?
Yeah, I think the signage is proportional to the building. A great addition. So, I like the logo. I really do. That's probably yes.
Jay Cook?
I'm going to vote yes on the application. The signage is very proportional to the building. In fact, the size is only a small percentage, less than 10% of the total facade in the front, which is de minimis. And then, again, very tastefully done. The back leg of these buildings is working out well. And also, I think just it sets a, I'm hoping it just shows other merchants and other people coming into the city what can be done with rebuilds and new facades, and a good example of what investment that does give. But thank you very much for that investment, but at the same time, it's good sign package. So I'm going to vote in favor.
Tom McAdam?
I vote yes. The Gavigan certainly made a substantial investment of risk in our town, and we commended for that. And given the fact that he has done that, he's still in a position to be sensitive to the board's concerns and willing to work with us.
Roman Zavihak?
I also vote yes. I think the variances are justified. The sizes of the signs do fit into the building. It will be a nice enhancement to Vedder Avenue. Good luck.
Lorraine Salata?
I think the main sign is proportionate to the building. It's easily read. It's a good font. And I appreciate the fact that you're willing to size down your logo sign. I think it will actually add to it, so I do vote yes.
Okay, that is it. The motion is carried. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
So, that is it. Next application is that of Dawn Gibbs, 211. 213 North Suffolk Avenue. A certificate is not given.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'm the record chair, but I have to recuse myself for this application.
Okay. The record reflected Peter Chaka was severing himself from the board and recused himself on this application. We will continue.
Evening, Brian Cowan of the law firm Cowan and Thompson Thompson. On behalf of Sean Gibbs, properties 211-213 North Suffolk Avenue, block 199, lots 3.01 and 3.02. Just for the record, all jurisdiction requirements have been met. This is a combination application. We asked for an interpretation, and the background is, this was a property that came before you a couple of months ago for a certificate of non-conformity to maintain the property as a 3-unit. It never got to a vote. The room was packed because it was the intent of the owners to sell the property to the Hanson Foundation to be used as housing plan, opioid house, that type of thing. The applicant withdrew their application. Mr. Gibbs, who was a neighbor, and at that hearing, stepped up to the plate and went down, talked to the owners, entered into a contract to sell the property. One of the concerns was that he needed the sellers to get out of the contract with the buyers to enter into a contract with him. The buyers at that time were demanding money to get released from the contract. The sellers didn't have the money to pay. Mr. Gibbs put up the money to pay. One of the requirements, though, was he needed to get to the settlement table as fast as possible. Took out the money, went to the settlement table in December. At the settlement table, Mr. Agostino issued a land use compliance for the only thing he could issue a land use compliance under the Zoning Act, single family. I wrote a letter to Mr. Agostino simultaneously with it to indicate it was not our intent to abandon the 3-family, that we were doing this because we could not get before the board for a 3-family unit until this month by putting the application together properly. So we're here tonight as part of our interpretation to say that the 3-family use has not been abandoned. There was never an intent to abandon it, and there was never an overt act to abandon it. So that's step one. And I don't know if Mr. Manis wants to go on that particular issue now or for me to go into the CNC portion of it, which why we think it conforms to a three-year building.
Well, and my thought is the one of the elements to prove to get to obtain a certificate of nonconformity, you have to show the use hasn't been abandoned and there was no intent to it. And that requires an intent to abandon, which also requires an overt act. My suggestion is to hear the testimony. That there's a timeline issue here that's, to me, we haven't heard what the applicant has to say yet, but just because they purchase a property that doesn't, and they obtain a land use compliance certificate that says single family, I don't think that necessarily evidence is an intent to buy as a single family or an intent to abandon the prior use. When it was to eat. They didn't have to ask Jimmy for anything, I don't think.
Well, but if they don't ask Jimmy for something, there's an ordinance violation. So,
right.
My instructions were to the applicant
sure.
to do the proven thing and comply with the requirements of the city of Venter and deal with it before the board. And I'll walk you then through our certificate of non-conforming application.
I would just proceed with your application and we can deal with that.
Our test year is 1947. So in the application package that I provided to you, we have a 1973 property record card showing three units. We have a 2011 property record card, three units. We have the Department of Community Affairs registration from 1985, 2005, 2008, also showing three units and three electric meters. South Jersey gas bills, three units. Atlantic City electric bills, three units. Uniform Fire Inspection Code, 2017, three units with rental licenses. We then went into the Polk Directors. 1946 Polk Directory, three units. 50 Polk Directory, three units. 54 Polk Directory, three units. 55 Polk Directory, three units. 56 Polk Directory, three units. 61, three units. 63, three units. 64, three units. Letter from Michael Zingarelli indicated they checked the electrical fire alarm systems in 2008, there were three units. There's letters from various neighbors indicating that the house has always been a triplex, and one letter from George Young indicating back to 1930. I have also indicated my letter of December 5th, 2019 to Mr. Agostino to indicate that we were not abandoning it along those lines. So I believe that we've been, and also I would also make a note that as this board knows from previous certificates of nonconformity, most records in Venter are 1961 and forward. In this particular case, it was 1973. So even though Venter's first zoning ordinance went into effect in 1929, Venter does not have any records from 1929 through 1961 due to asbestos, fires, floods, whatever. So the applicant does bear a greater burden to go back to 1947 test year because the city of Venter does not have records that go back that far. So that's why you go to the Polk directories, you go to the neighbors, etc. So we believe that we've been able to establish that the three units have been there. Mr. Young's letter puts it from 1930. Polk directories go from 46. Every record in the city of Venter from 73 on shows it as a three-unit building, including rental licenses, layouts, and everything else. I have Mr. Gibbs here, in the event that they have any questions of him, of how he got involved with the property and why he did it. I think it's pretty obvious, though.
So at this point in time, the earliest bulk record you have is 46.
46.
You have none prior to that?
None.
You had letters from owners, but that would be letters. What is the procedure? Can we accept the letters of the people aren't here? They're going to be alive, I don't know.
Typically, an application like this, when you're trying to get back to a test year, we have typically accepted letters for applications.
Probably some of that testimony was on the record at the last hearing.
It was. The one who testified took you back in 1953.
Right.
The one letter in here comes from Nancy Kreischer, pretty prominent lady in town, and she indicates that she remembered the building as a little girl, and this time period was prior to 1947. So, and she has my earliest recollection of tenants in the building were Harry and Jeanette Dockery, who over the years were on floor 2 and floor 3, and Mr. Clifford Wilkins, who resided on floor 2. So, I mean, some of the letters are, you know, people who are alive and have a direct memory of what was going on. I'm sure if we had Greer Gaskell here, we knew someone in that building. You know what I mean?
So your 1946 bulk directory indicates 3 units, correct?
Yes.
And that's the case. I talked to the Molinar sisters, and they have a discipline that they remember that one of them remembers it back in the 50s when they moved into the house, that it was 3 units. But they, when they moved, was when they built the house. So, that's as far as I go back with personal information. Just knowing I've been on that property and been on that property next to it, on our property. And so I know the property.
I didn't know the property until I really got involved with this and took a look at it. I mean, when you look at it, it looks like it was built as 3. So it has 3 garages, so it needs some tender loving care.
As far as ingress and egress, there's 2 doors in the front of the building that the egress did this morning.
Don't want to have a square.
Sure, Mr. Gibbs, can you state your name for the record, please?
Sean Gibbs.
And your address, obviously.
256 American Drive, Richfield, Pennsylvania.
Can you swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give to the truth?
I do.
Where do you live down here?
Well, our family. You want the long answer?
Yeah, we go long.
The day of Sandy, our family, who had previously had a house on Newton Avenue in Atlantic City, and I was responsible for finding a new family house. And so we found the old Mr. Robb's house. I don't know if anybody remembers Mr. Robb. He owned the liquor store. Found his property, and we were scheduled to close the day of Sandy. And apparently, nobody was conducting business that day, so we couldn't do that. But long story short, we ended up purchasing that property, and we turned it into a wonderful family home. And when I say family, I'm talking my in-laws, my mother-in-law, my father-in-law, sisters, all of us. And then we recently, my father were building the property across the street, was completely damaged in Sandy, and sat foreclosed for a long time. So we decided to purchase it as a family, not me personally, and build it there. So you could, and that property that's currently almost done being built shares a property line on the back with subject property. So the night before the meeting, October 28th, my father-in-law says to me, "Hey, would you mind running down to the meeting?" I said, "Sure." And I showed up, and I didn't know there was gonna be pitchforks and flamethrowers here. So I didn't know what I had just gotten into. And so I went back home, and I said, "Hey, you're not complete with what's going on." So the very next day, a lot of people were complaining, as you know, outside and on the street, complaining about it, calling an attorney, something like that. That's not going to fix it. So I said, heck with it. And I just drove to the seller's house in Cape May. And I said, "Look, here's the deal. We got a whole family. We were really invested in Ventnor. We love Ventnor. This has become like our haven. I'm from Ohio, so this is like heaven for me, So I went down and I explained the situation. I said, "If there's any way you can get out of this, I'll be here." And said, "Here's what I'd be willing to do." You can imagine what I had to do. So, but it was that important to me because I felt like I was protecting not only our investment, but everybody else's, I have 4 little kids. My in-laws had a book, or my sister-in-law had the kids. So to me, this was something that was more important than mine. Yeah. So
let's go back to Mr. Gavin's question.
There's 2 entrances in the front.
Yeah.
The they're both titled 211?
Well, that the building is 211. On the application, it says 211 and 213. All together, they were listed as a package. But technically, 211 is the triplex. And it sits on 3.01, parcel 3.01. And then the other part, which is 32 feet wide, I have the survey from the title company. And then property 3.02 or parcel 3.02 is technically 213. So really when we're talking about this, we're talking about specifically 211. And the numbering of the doors, the way it is currently situated is the door on the right is the first floor entryway. You walk right into the first floor apartment. The floor door on your left goes up to the second floor and then continues obviously to the third floor. And each floor has its own separate apartment with all separate utilities, separate electric.
So facing the building, if I want to go to the third floor, I can move the door on the left?
Correct.
And the back fire escape would be good for exits?
Yes. Yes, the fire escapes are zero before. And my understanding is they were good as well. It's not my understanding, I know for a fact, because I stared at it across from our house when before they knocked down the foreclosure across the street. It's in a direct line of sight from our property on the water. And we could see the fire escape. We saw them built, I believe it was 3 years ago, 4 years ago, shortly after Sandy. Right?
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Chairman, if I may, yes. Question for Mr. Gibbs. Are the people still living in there that were there before?
John and his wife, they currently live on the third floor. My understanding is that the previous potential buyer kind of had requested people to vacate,
right,
in anticipation of their intended use. So people vacated, so those people left. And the people that was on the second floor. The people on the first floor were just recently evicted for non-payment of rent after 4 months. With regard to the use, I specifically, when I signed the contract with them, you know, they wanted to put wood on your purchase, on your, what's it called?
Agreement of sale.
Agreement of sale. On the agreement of sale, it typically has a stock, single and multifamily. And on there, I didn't want to put single, I didn't want to put multifamily, I put as permitted by the city. Because, you know, I was not abandoning anything. I wanted to be able to utilize it as triplex, and I wanted to be able to fix it up and recoup some of the money that I just dumped into it. It's true, you know, because, I mean, you know, I ended up with a house I didn't want to buy.
The reason for the question was abandonment. You have not abandoned that.
No.
You haven't changed anything inside of there.
Absolutely.
Two units that are on.
I started to take out the carpet on the second floor, and you know, so.
That's just upkeep. That's
not it.
Yeah.
That was really for my question.
Yeah. Correct.
Thank you.
And the fact that he has a tenant.
Agreed.
And that clarifies everything.
And as we heard a little bit more, there's really two elements when it comes to Concord Road. Like, when it comes, I know we're not there, I just want to. There's a year where triplexes became prohibited, which we're saying is 1947. So the applicant has to establish that the triplex was there prior to that date. That's the first part, and that it hasn't been abandoned. And abandonment is some overt act or some failure act which carries a sufficient implication that the owner either claims nor retains any interest in the subject matter of the abandonment of the triplex use and an intention to abandon. So the discussion at the beginning of the hearing with Mr. Callahan over the fact that when the applicant went to close on the property, he got a land use certificate from Jimmy. It says single family. To me, all that really evidence was that the applicant was agreeing to buy a triplex in the residential zone. I mean, when he gets that certificate and closes, that I'm abandoning the use or I intend to abandon the use. And I think his testimony is now clarified that. And again, he still has a runner in there.
Mr. Gibbs.
Yes, sir. Did you intend at any time when you're doing your purchase of this building to abandon the triplex use?
Absolutely not.
Thank you. Are you completing your...
Completed the initial application.
Board members, any other further questions or for the public? At this time, I'm going to open up to the public. Is there anyone who would like to address the board at this time?
Name and address, and I'll swear in.
Sure. Michael Granato, 233 North Surrey Avenue.
Mr. Granato, do you swear or affirm testimony you're about to give will be the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
I just like to say that the thanks, Sean, for buying this place is a little cold. It's a dump. He's going to fix it up, and you guys really need to come forward and make this something happen for him. I understand it's all kinds of requirements and that type of thing. Everybody knows this was going to be a drug rehab. I was going to sell my property and get out of the area for that reason, because it's just detrimental. He's decided to pony up and put his money where his mouth is and turn this dump into something that'll be nice for the neighborhood. Thank you.
Please just one, sir.
Ed Cummings, 210, I live across the street. Board, thank Sean for buying.
Sorry, Adam. 210, sorry.
What's that?
210, sorry.
210 Suffolk. I live across the street.
That's across the street. You swear affirm the testimony you're about to give will be the truth?
Yes.
Get it.
And my mother, Catherine, she walks a little funny, so she's not going to get up. She's been bought the place in 1970. Ever since she's been here, it's always been a triplex. But thanks, Sean. If you guys see that it's a triplex and give Sean the approval, thank you.
Christopher Provenzano, 216 North Surrey Avenue.
Mr. Provenzano, do you swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give me the truth?
Yes, sir, I do. I'd just like to say I moved into the neighborhood in 2007. I've been there 13 years. As long as I've been there, it's been a triplex. From behind my property, I can see those fire escapes that were put in. On a personal note, I just want to put it on record as a law enforcement professional. Somebody that works in public safety every day, also a parent of three teenagers. I want to applaud Mr. Gibbs for what he did, in reference to what we talked about back in November. And it's everything him and his family has put his hands on has been upgraded in the neighborhood. His home, the one they're building, are beautiful, and it's a great thing for us. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to speak? Seeing no more requests, the public portion of this application is now closed. Roger, do you have to put your comments into the record, please?
I didn't do a report, Mr. Chairman, but I did review the application, and I did recall during the previous session that the applicant was here on a different application. The fact of the matter is, if I recall correctly, they could only get to 1953, but it's the fact that they're producing a document here from 1946, which predates the 1947 test year, I think gives complete indication that this was a duplex triplex prior to the test date. The other documentation provided, the fire escapes, and you even build a, you don't spend the money, that kind of money on a fire escape for 2 units, it's a 3-unit fire escape. There are prior rental licenses, certificate of occupancies, the meters. There's no way this application or this use was abandoned. And yeah, I think of an abandoned use as a doctor's office in a basement that was there 50 years ago while the equipment's gone. That's not the case here. This is a 3-unit triplex. In my opinion.
Gentlemen, you have anything for that?
We have nothing further to talk.
You agree with Mr. McClarnon?
We do. We believe it's a triplex.
Hopefully you're going to say no.
I am not sure.
I'm laughing.
Yeah. So, at this point in time, I think we might do here is But the simplest thing is to do an interpretation of both, the interpretation that is a triplex that wasn't intended, and then also to give grant CNC so that there's a dual triplex, so that the records can be filed into the system. And that way, there's it's a dual certificate certification, which has two methods of following. And that way, it's a good track of property.
Sure, that's fine. But I mean, but granting the certificate of nonconformity, you're implicitly stating there hasn't been abandonment. But we can call it a motion, make an affirmative interpretation that there has not been an abandonment, together with the grant of the certificate of nonconformity with continued operation. That's the right word, of the triplex.
Is that the resolution?
That's the motion.
Yeah, that is the resolution. May I have a motion? Can I have a second, please?
For a
roll call vote.
Second.
Okay, we have a roll call vote, please. Who's the motion, first of all? Okay.
And I'm sorry, who's second?
The Commissioner Clayton, we have a second answer to the motion. Have a roll call vote. Major reasons, please.
Commissioner Langraff?
I think this application met the criteria for certificate of nonconformity. There was no abandonment, no intent to abandon the property. Gibbs, thank you for stepping up here. At our last hearing, I voiced the community's concern, the governing body's concern about the overpopulation of our community by group homes. We are still working within our own means now, because DCA has essentially abandoned us to stop this use. We've had a meeting with them last week. It was a waste of my time. So we will do what we can locally, and we're moving in that direction. That's for everybody here. We'll do what we can. We don't know if we can stop it, but we're going to try. So I vote yes.
Commissioner Preble?
I agree with Commissioner Langraff. I think the season records show the use has not been abandoned. I think your dedication to your neighborhood is uncommon and should be gone. Thank you.
Tom Halpin?
I vote yes. The Office of Fire Prevention Inspections always recognize this as a triplex. And I think you can prove it too, along with all I've never seen most of these records, but I vote yes.
Jay Cook?
I'm going to vote for the building, the interpretation that it is a triplex, that it was never abandoned, and that I move to grant the CNC based on the information from the provided, including all the directors and so on. And during that meeting, I stated that the city was kind of out of ammunition, just to kind of combat these things, and it was up to members of the community to solve it, if they could. And Mr. Gibbs, I guess you were the magic bullet. With that, I do acknowledge, and I grant those, I seek those things more fitting, and give you a dual track on the occupancy of that property.
Tom McAdam.
I believe there's sufficient documentation to support that this was a triplex from 1937 prior to 1937. I believe that it has demonstrated a lot of character in what he's done here. Very happy for the people that have stayed here tonight to be able to support your application. And I'd like to have you in favor. Thank you. Congratulations.
Roman Zabby Hatch.
I also vote yes. I concur with everything and said thank you for what you've done.
Lorraine Salata.
I think it's very clear that it is triplex. As clear that it was never abandoned. And I think it's heartwarming to see someone that passionate about the neighborhood. So I vote yes, and congratulations.
Thank you very much.
I just have a quick comment off the record. Not related to the application. My house that I now live in, the closing was Morgan Stanley. So I didn't close until 2 weeks ago. And I'm glad I'm here.
Okay.
So I really have a
thank you very much.
very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Starbucks is being mad.
Oh, I was going to say, I'm not an
sorry.
You're me for a little bit. I was like a heavenly body.
That'll happen. An angel.
One last case. Next case is that of 204 North Princeton Avenue. See various. You can have everybody sworn, please. Now I'm in.
Sure. Mr. Sigismondi and Mr. Barnhart, just name and address for the record. I'll swear you both.
Jim Sigismondi, 204 North Princeton Avenue.
John Barnhart, 400 North Dover Avenue.
Do you swear from the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, all truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thanks.
And I'll let the record reflect that Mr. Barnhart's credentials as an engineer and planner are acceptable. Brian, why don't you just go right into this whole thing and explain where we are, what we're doing, and how we got here, and whatever you want, how you want to present this.
Good evening, Brian Callahan, Walker Callahan, Thompson, Thompson. All jurisdictional requirements have been met. This is an application that came before you in 2017. Mr. Sigismondi had built a deck, and you're asking for variance relief for front yard, side yard, and rear yard. That application was denied by 4 no votes, 3 yes votes. Mr. Sigismondi appealed the application. The judge upheld the city amender. Appeal to the appellate division, the judge upheld the city event. Mr. Sigismondi came back here tonight with an amended application whereby we're removing the deck 2 feet off of the back wall. As you recall, the neighbor behind us has a garage that abuts the front property line and runs down our side property line at a 0 foot level. The board at that time had some concerns about maintenance of the property line set up. So we decided to pull the property 2 feet off of the wall. We had discussions with Mr. Bagelson prior to tonight. His client was looking for 3 feet off of the wall, and his client wanted an easement over the property. We thought 3 feet was too much, and we did not want to give up an easement, which we thought would have a diminution in value on the property. There are hundreds of buildings and garages that are on 0 property lines without easements being given. So we're here tonight to ask for pre-removed. We still need a front yard variance. We still need a rear yard variance because of how the property adjusts. As you see that little portion, it's a bar out of order. But this little portion of the fence that comes out here is technically your rear yard. So while we have left this portion of that fence, the rest of the rear yard is wide open with no decking. It was cut down about 2 steps. So we still need a front yard variance, a side yard variance, and a rear yard variance. Let me call Mr. Barnhart, and let's just walk him through that right now for a little bit.
Mr. Chairman, I just make a comment on behalf of the neighbor.
Yes.
Chris Bales on behalf of Glazes, who are next over the corner. I know here previously, and we're just going to speak to the application. Preliminarily, I would like to raise the issue of race to God and whether this application should actually be heard and whether it's substantially similar to the prior application that was heard. The document race to God, you look at 4 things. Is it the same parties? Is it the same application or substantially similar? Has the matter been heard previously and adjudicated on the merits? And have any of the conditions surrounding the application changed that would warrant rehearing? I suggest to you, this is the same application, still 6 Bundy, still a side yard setback, rear yard setback, front yard setback with no change, only there's a 2 feet difference. It's not substantially similar to what's before. It's the same application with the same variance as being requested. can't, you know, next time he's going to come back, next time, if he doesn't get 2 feet, he'll come back next time with 3 feet. That's not the way, you're not supposed to get multiple bites at the apple. You get one shot, unless you come back with something that is dramatically different. But for instance, maybe if you took the front yard side back and improved that as well, it's not. That might be substantial. In this instance, the operative issue is that side yard setback up against my client's garage, and whether or not this is that much different. Mr. Manos can direct you more specifically on the lawn, I'm sure Mr. Callahan will be very good.
Sure. We'll let Mr. Callahan respond and I can show the board and we'll deal with that up front.
We'll go through with Mr. Barnhart's testimony. Well, the response is that the side yard setback is a 40% change in variance relief. To us, that's a substantial change.
Is there a 4 foot setback requirement or 5 feet? 4 feet. So, it's a 50%.
50% change.
All right. I just wanted to make that.
It's a 50% change in the variance that was requested.
Does everyone understand this issue? If you bring an application before the board and it's denied, you can't bring an identical one or substantially similar. Because the board adjudicated it, you don't get another shot. But for, there's certain caveats to that. But the idea being, you don't get a second bite of the apple. Now, the elements to establish race judicata, so if it's present, the bar him from even proceeding or the following. Mr. Gunnelson, I think hit on most of them, right, if not all. The second application, meaning this one, is substantially similar to the first, so that's something the board has to consider. The same parties or their privies are involved. Well, the same parties are involved, so that is the fact that it is present. There must be no substantial change in the application itself or conditions surrounding the property. So again, that sort of relates to the first one, whether there's a substantial difference between the two applications. There must have been an adjudication on the merits in the first case. There has. He came before the board and he was denied. And both actions involved the same cause of action. They did the variance applications. Mr. Benelson's argument is, well, he's moved it 2 feet, but it's really the same application. Mr. Callahan's argument is, well, we moved it 2 feet. It was zero. The requirement is only 4, and we moved it 2. So it's not like the requirement is 20 feet, and we moved it 2. It's 4 feet. We went from 0 to 2. So we made a 50% reduction in the side yard setback. And I'll just read one section that from the Cox book. The sort of sums it up. It says, if an applicant files an application seeking to erect a building within 5 feet of a property line and the variance is denied, neither the applicant nor any subsequent owner may file an application seeking exactly the same kind of relief. On the other hand, if the second application seeks to erect a building 10 feet from a property line, and the same relief is not being sought, and then the matter would not be race judicata. So that's the law. If does anyone have any questions or want to have any discussion on that, because we're going to take a vote on that.
Just to be clear, the only difference from this application from the previous one is that 2 feet.
That's correct.
That's the only difference. But we cannot do it.
2 feet along the entire side yard.
2 feet?
Yes.
And in the front. So not the entire side yard. So wait a minute. It's not the entire side yard, it's a portion of the side yard. The side yard continues back further from the lot.
Okay, it's the side yard to what is that 6 foot jut out to that rear yard setback. So it runs along the entire garage pole to get to the rear yard setback.
And what is the depth of the yard?
The deck in question is what I'm outlining here in my finger. You can see the red shaded area there, that's the crosshatch. That's the portion of the deck that is proposed to be removed and pulled away from the adjacent garage. So the prior application had that deck going along right up against that garage wall, and the length of that property line was 22.5 feet. The proposed application moves it off 2 feet, so we have a 2-foot setback before that full length of 22.5 feet. From a ratio top standpoint, I happen to be the one that did the testimony the first time around, and I just want to point out, you know, it's a small project, so small changes are substantial in my opinion. And if you have a zero setback, you're asking for a deviation from 100% of the standard, where 4 feet is required. And as I recall, and somebody can correct me if I'm wrong in this, a large portion of the discussion the last time around was related to the side yard setback in the neighbor's garage. Our client, whether you agree or disagree with it, is not really what we're talking about yet. That would be if we go forward with the application. But our client has made the decision that this deck is that important to him. So he's proposing a 50% greater side yard setback than he originally proposed, which, keep in mind, while it doesn't sound like a lot, 2 feet, the requirement is only 4 feet. So as Leo, Mr. Mattis pointed out, if it was a 30-foot side yard and we went from 0 to 2, well, I can't really stand up here with a straight face and say that's a substantial change. But the requirement is 4, and we're proposing 2, where we weren't proposing nothing before. So from a planning perspective, we think it is a substantial change. While it's small, it's a small project. So we believe that ratio to cottage does not apply here, but obviously that's what the board did decide.
Okay, so I understand that is an existing deck that was built?
That's correct.
It was built
when?
2016, 2017. That's when we came before the board, and it was denied. The application with the zero setback, as I said, was denied. 4 no votes, 3 yes.
So the deck was built before you came before the board?
Yes.
And
without permits,
it went to court?
It was up on appeal, correct.
Went twice and it was...
The City of Ventnor's decision was upheld, saying you were not arbitrary, capricious, or unreasonable in your initial decision.
So didn't that constitute a decision that deck had to be removed?
No. Well, it constituted a decision that based upon the substantial change that we've made tonight, that you have the ability to say whether the new decking can be permitted or not.
It's an existing deck that hasn't been accepted.
Correct.
So it's in limbo, basically, is what it is.
Purgatory.
Yes.
I may be mistaken, because I do recall the application from a couple of years ago. I thought the applicant had built the deck.
He didn't.
The whole deck.
He didn't.
The deck is there.
Was it permanent?
No, what I'm saying, he did or he didn't build the deck.
The deck is there.
He built it. Right. Yeah. He built it using his own, without any permits, and he just built what he thought should be there.
Correct.
Okay. So when you say it's existing, when you came to the application originally, it was existing, but it was a newly built deck. And at that point, we're supposed to look at it like it's not there.
Correct.
Right. So why wouldn't we still be applying that?
We should.
Correct. We should be applying.
So when you say it's existing, the board should be thinking, no, it's not existing, because we have to judge it as we would a new construction.
You would have to judge it as if you would be doing a new construction without factoring into it was built without permits. So you have to be looking at this new application to say, does this deck satisfy a positive or negative criteria? Is it going to harm the character of the neighborhood? Is it going to harm the zoning plans or anywhere?
So when you say it's existing, you know, that kind of puts a different connotation to it. And it's misleading because you're looking at it as a novel.
Well, I don't
know.
So, if it was in violation, why doesn't it have to meet the setback?
Because we're asking you for a variance.
So why don't you just take over the 2 feet?
How much of the deck is left?
Minus the front of your yard. If you apply all the setbacks, the deck goes, it's gone. You put that back. If you were to build a complying deck, you wouldn't build a deck. That's where it's taken. But you have to remember, it's a side yard, it's a rear yard, and this little jog in the property line, and it's also a front yard. So cut that back, cut that back, cut that back to 4 feet, and you give a landing, not a deck. And that's the request.
We're getting a little bit off topic. The first application requested a deck with a 0-foot side yard setback that went directly up against the Glanz's garage. It essentially touched the garage.
A zero front yard setback and a zero rear yard setback.
Exactly. As is shown on the plans, except 2 feet over to the side yard against the neighboring garage. He was denied that application. It went through the courts, and now he is back, and he's saying, I bring in a new application. And instead of going directly up against the Glanz, the Glanz's garage to 0 feet, where there's a 4 foot required setback, I'm moving it in 2 feet, so there's now a 2 foot separation. Is this, in the board's opinion, is this the same application which required him from even proceeding? Or is the 2 foot significant, considering it's now no longer against the Glanz's property? So there is some spacing, and the side yard setback was 4 feet. It was, like Mr. Barnhart said, it wasn't like it was a 30-foot setback requirement. It was went from 0 feet to 2 feet, but the requirement's on 4 feet. And that's...
The other question that comes into play is the intent of moving the section, and the intent to a piece of land, or the intent to qualify with our ordinance.
That might be an issue, but it's not an issue as to whether this application is different than the first one.
This point,
if he brought an application, again requesting a 0 side yard setback, would it be deck against the garage? It would be an identical application. My advice would be to you be that you cannot proceed if you already brought that application.
My advice to the client would have been the same.
Yeah, I'm not representing
that. You couldn't comply with those who caught it.
So
the same
he's now moved to 2 feet. The question is it a different application that they can proceed? And that's a preliminary,
based on your definition, I interpret it right.
That would be what, Jay?
A new application. My interpreter, right? On the definition you gave from COPS.
I wouldn't disagree with you, but it's not.
Okay.
I can instruct you in the law. I don't want to really tell you how to vote on the definition.
Yeah, my thought is that if we don't hear the case, and he gets turned down again, okay, then he wants to appeal that. Well, that law, which I'm not even going to try to say, but, you know, would that be then worthy of the fact that, you know, if we don't hear it, could that land us in a worse position for the board if we don't hear it?
No.
I'm not throwing out here again.
It's the main question. I always say that I do this kind of stuff. So there, in my mind, I think we need to at least hear it.
Yeah.
Just throw my opinion out there. This to me is a change. Is it enough change? That's going to be decided after this application. We're moving 2 feet of the deck, almost 3 feet of the deck that's in our right of way. And he's taking 2 feet off that side.
Right. The merits of the application.
I think Lorraine's right.
Or another.
If we don't even give a chance to hear, we're going to be back in court. And we're going to waste more of our tax dollars.
I think it's a matter of fairness in this situation. We should just go about future case and not get wrapped up in the small details. The board always prides itself in being fair and fairness. So let's go ahead and proceed with giving it a fair shot.
You should go to
you do your best. Can we do a vote here?
Yeah, let's do a motion that We usually don't want the affirmative, but that gets confusing in situations like this. But based on the discussion, a motion that res judicata does not bar this application, and the application will proceed. Motion and a second. A yes vote will mean that it will proceed. A no vote means that you think it's the same application, and it won't proceed.
I'll make that motion. Second.
Yeah. So just call the name, and just a yes or no.
Yes.
Is everyone voting?
You can give seven.
Yes.
Seven?
Seven.
Commissioner Langgraf?
Yes.
Tim Kriebel? Commissioner Kriebel?
No.
Tom Halpin?
No.
Jay Cook?
Yes.
Tom McAdam?
Yes.
Roman Zabihatch?
Yes.
Lorraine Salata?
Yes.
Okay, so 5-2, res judicata doesn't bar the application. It's 2 feet. It's different, so it's going to proceed on the merits. Now, we're just going to consider the fact that the deck is built. Again, this is a zoning application. You should look at it from a land use perspective. The applicant should be punished because it's there, but he also shouldn't be forgiven because he may have to take it out. It should just be strictly, just keep that in mind as you're listening to the testimony.
Back to Mr. Barnhart. Let's walk through the application a little bit. Barnhart, exhibits, and we'll go over there.
Sure. I'm going to talk to you today, one. This is the plan that was submitted as part of the application package. It's a survey of the site itself, together with the improvements shown on it, and I've also marked the area of the deck that would create the setbacks that we're going to discuss. So the application is, if you visit the property, it's a one-story brick and stucco building, single-family home. The block is the bay block of Princeton Avenue. The block is made up mostly of two-story homes. This is a very modestly sized home, given the development from the corner all the way down to the bay. Those homes along that bay are, as I mentioned, are all two-story, or mostly all two-story. I've got some photographs here, which I'm going to call Exhibit A2. And what they show is a number of different things, but you know, just to give you the streetscape, you can see in the upper right here, this is Mrs. Money's house. As you're heading away, this is looking away from the bay, you can see the garage has been discussed at length already, adjacent to our side yard, which is right up to the front property line, has a roof deck upon it. The building behind it has a second level deck. The building diagonal from Mr. Sigismundi, you can see in this photo, has second level decks. All these decks are trying to catch as close to the water. They're all looming over Mr. Sigismundi's property, surrounding that whole section. Take the streetscape and go from Mr. Sigismundi's property and go toward the bay. That's the photo that I have down here. You can see in the background, multi-level decks along the front of the properties going down toward the bay. So what Mr. Sigismundi proposes, and it's very, I can clearly explain to you because as you know it's there, but that's so you can see what it would look like, is a deck that is what we thought was the most inconspicuous and the least obtrusive location for a deck to have some outdoor space along the street frontage, like all the other properties along this bank block have. He kind of is proposing to make a little nook over here where you have a little bit of a unique piece of property where the property line jogs at 22 and a half feet back. You have a garage next to his property that has no windows in it. It has a roof deck on top of it. It goes for the entirety of the length of that property line. And then you have his one-story home. So what he's proposing is to create a little nook of a deck at that location, but that deck does require setback variances. The proposal is to have a deck that fits along the front property line at a zero setback, which would match the setback of an adjacent neighbor. He's proposing to have a 2-foot side yard setback for the entire side property line of 22 and a half feet. That the deck would have a railing along that 2-foot setback, and which would allow some separation between the adjacent structure and the proposed edge of the deck. And he is proposing a little, which would be, this would be, this line here would be considered a rear yard. He is proposing to have a zero setback at that rear yard line as well. So they are the variances. So how are they justified? Well, single-family house projects like this, it's, I'm going to be honest, it's difficult to justify a variance for things such as setback. But what you have here, in our opinion, is you have a property based on the pattern of development of this block that's at a real disadvantage. It's a small house. It's one story. It was very nicely renovated. It's the house itself was nicely renovated. And Mrs. Figgis-Mundy is trying to have some outdoor living space up on the street, which is what all his neighbors have. He's proposing it in the location that he's proposing it because he believed that it was the least obtrusive or the least impactful to the surrounding properties, given what he sees from his property to their properties with all the decks and things that they have. So from our perspective, we believe that this application, it's hard to argue that it's a hardship. So I'm looking at this as though it's a C2 type of variance, with the benefits really being an aesthetic enhancement to the property by continuing to upgrade the property, by building in a new deck, and with, you know, state-of-the-art materials that in this front yard. The real key to an application like this is, what are the negatives? What are the real negative impacts, okay? So the first is there a negative substantial, and that's the test of a new land use law, is there a substantial negative impact to the zone plan or the zone plan? Well, if I had a block from the bay all the way down that had a front yard setback that was per your ordinance, goes through zones of 12 feet, that's allowed to protect the visitors, front porch allowed to project into those setbacks by about 5 feet. If I had a block that met that all the way down the block, and all of a sudden we said, hey, we want to take our deck right to the front property line, that's impactful. That creates a substantial negative impact to the neighbors. But that's not what we have here. We have a specifically positioned deck based on the conditions of the development that surrounds us, that we believe is an appropriate request. We have a deck at a location that has no impact by way of windows to the structure adjacent to us. We are at a disadvantage with the development and the decks that are around us and how they are positioned and looking back at our property. And we're just, and Mr. Giovanni is just trying to gain some outdoor living space. For all those reasons, we do not believe there is a substantial negative impact or a substantial negative detriment with regard to the placement of the deck and the setbacks that are being requested. With regard to the, let me take that one step further. The other issue with decks and setbacks is things like noise, things of that nature. If you were to cut this, for example, if I was to cut this from 2 feet to 4 feet and make it to 5, the impacts of what goes on that deck or the deck itself, they don't change because the building is from property line to property line next to us. So again, I go through, there is no substantial negative impact or detriment to the public good as a result of the application. The second prong of that is there a substantial detriment to the zoning plan and zoning ordinance? And again, I would argue that new construction, we wouldn't even be asking for this, first of all. We would tell our client the reasonable. Given the specific circumstances of this site, and given the specific location of this proposed deck, we would argue that there is no substantial detriment or negative impact to the zoning plan or the zoning ordinance. So we believe that the positive and negative criteria are established in this application and that the variances can be granted. And, you know, this project or this site has kind of, or this deck, I'll say, has kind of taken on a life of its own. I mean, if you went by it, this is a deck that's, depending on where you measure it from, 20 to 24 inches above grade. There's only a couple steps up. When you go to the rear of the deck, it's only really like one step down onto the, it's barely a deck. It's almost like a side yard patio. But it has created a lot of stir. Obviously, the neighbor has great concerns for it. The board had concerns for it last time around. The change that we made, that we went to talk about recently, cut about, pulls the deck away from the side property line. But we proposed the side yard setback at zero for the entirety of that structure. There was a lot of discussion about that at the last hearing. Based on that, Mr. Sigsmundy has proposed to pull the proposed deck off of the lawn by 2 feet, so there still would be access for maintenance along that side of the deck. This is a case, in our opinion, that the word de minimis really comes into question. This is, if this deck is built at this location, it had no effect on anybody. If you're driving down Princeton Avenue toward the bay, right now, it's a bad scenario because the thing extends beyond the existing garage next door, but forget about that for a second. As you're driving down Princeton Avenue toward the bay, you won't even see this because the front edge of the deck will be at or slightly behind the garage immediately adjacent to it. So, you know, is this a deviation from the land use ordinance? It is, because we are asking for a front side and rear yard setback. But you have to look at the scope of the project and how impactful it really is to this neighborhood in making a decision.
What are the other criteria people always look at? Light, air, use, impact? How do we impact any light and air?
In my opinion, there is no impact to air, light, open space. And the reason I can make that statement is strictly based because of the height of the deck. If this was a deck that was proposed to be 4 or 5 feet in the air, and then railings above that, and you're walking along the sidewalk, and it's, you know, it's up over your head as you go by, that's an impact. This deck is, you know, as high as you go by it, maybe. I mean, it's more, in my opinion, it is not creating negative impact to air, light, open space.
Also, the same criteria that apply the first time and the second time with respect to the encroachment in public right of way being removed, that deck that encroaches.
Well, yeah, I'm not saying it's being removed because, as we mentioned, we're treating the application as though the deck's not
there. No,
the proposal is that the deck sits on the front property line, no encroachment into the right of way.
I don't have any other questions, Mr. Barnhart. I would really
want. Barnhart, where are the steps and where are the rails on this deck? Are there steps or rails on this deck?
You can see it here, but they're obviously here.
I can't see them.
Okay. Let me show you what it's like. It's not really a step, there's one step down at this location to get to the concrete walkway that's back here.
Right.
And then there is a riser right here.
One riser.
One to the deck.
One riser.
But that's a two riser.
You need three risers to get this at 22 inches, you need three risers to the deck.
Well, the walkway slopes up, and then there's two risers with one tread. So there's a walkway here that slopes up, and then there's a riser, a tread, a riser, and that gets you onto the deck.
Right.
So what walkway? There's no walkway in the plan. Is it concrete? Does that add to the covers of the site?
Yeah, the concrete patio covers in front of the whole house.
It's not shown on the plan. It's a driveway and porch. I can only explain it.
No problem with your comments.
Yeah, and to answer your question, yeah, this actually is concrete now. But it would still be under the cover. No way under the cover. The back door is over.
It's 65% without that cover.
I can do the math for you real quick.
No,
just to say that one he said he had his information.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
What was the question?
I just said we were talking about at the front yard, moving over to the deck, there's a concrete walk, there was just the concrete part of the house.
This is the one step to the deck, leading to the walkway. There's like a small little walkway where you walk on to go up to the deck. Because there's all landscape on both sides.
Okay, there used to be a concrete pad in front of the house, which I thought way back when.
No concrete pad.
Okay. I didn't understand.
But that's the traveling.
There's concrete on the other side, at the other end. At the other end, gets you the driveway, park the car.
Right, I see that.
If I assume that entire thing is concrete right now, it adds about 5%. It's still 5%.
And what's the deck frame? So that doesn't count.
Correct.
What is the gap in the deck? gap in the grid, in the boards, the space between the boards.
Quarter inch half inch?
Quarter inch half inch.
The space between the board is the...